my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, it is episode 99 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. Thanks as always for listening and sharing. Episode 100 next week. Promises, whoop, we're making noises here. Let me turn down the sound. Episode 100 next week, though, a WWE Hall of Famer. But this week, you're going to have to settle for my partner in crime, Chad Smart. Chad, it's been a while. Welcome back to the show.
I know, jerk face, you haven't had me on. I'm going to stick to my promise and just insult you the entire time.
It was the restraining order, you know? the digital restraining order, it's finally expired, so I thought I'd have you back on.
Well, I actually printed out and framed it because it was my 100th restraining order, so.
Very nice, very nice. So for this week's show, we are recording it before No Mercy, so if you're looking for No Mercy analysis, go to my123cents.com. There will be a blog up. If you're listening Monday morning as this drops, there'll be a blog up Monday afternoon, so you can check out thoughts on No Mercy. And while we are kind of talking about No Mercy, Chad, I want to just throw this one out there because I've already said it, and I'm confident enough that WWE is not going to do it, so I probably am wrong here, but let's talk about John Cena for a minute and winning the 16th WWE World Heavyweight Championship. I don't think that it has happened. If it has happened, fast forward 2 or 3 minutes, guys, to the next segment of the show. But what are your thoughts? I've blogged about it, about him beating or tying Ric Flair's record. What are your thoughts? Should this happen or will this happen? And, you know, is it a good idea?
I have a feeling it will happen. Maybe not this weekend. Or, you know, yesterday or however many days ago that you listened to this. I don't think now is the time, but I see it happening eventually, and I think they're going to make, when it happens, that victory will mean more and will be on a bigger show than the fourth pay-per-view of the month.
Yeah. Now, do you think it should be – obviously, the next one will be the tie – Does it stay that way, or does John Cena eventually eclipse it and be the new man, so to speak?
I think if it's going to happen, he will beat it. He will eventually lose the title, regain it the 17th time. I would be curious where Cena stands on this. Does he just see it as, well, this is the business, whatever, or is he possibly thinking, no, I don't. You know, that is Ric Flair's mark. He's at that stage in his career where he doesn't need a title.
Right.
I know he says he's never going away, but I would have to think that somewhere within the next 5 years, he's going to be done as a full-time performer.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even in 2016, we've seen a lot less of him than we have over the last decade or so.
Yeah, and I think that's that. I think it's a good thing. I think it's WWE kind of moving into a new generation. And as you pointed out on the blog, I believe Cena is going to be leaving to go off and shoot the next season of American Grit, whatever the name is, the Fox reality show.
Uh-huh.
And not that you need your champion to be on every show, and I kind of have argued in the past that having the champion wrestle every week kind of devalues the title. But I do – so I think it's too early to take the title off Kevin Owens. And I also think that if you put it back on Cena, you send that message to the fans that nothing is changing in WWE.
Right, and I think you mean AJ Styles, but
AJ Styles, yes, yeah. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I can't keep track anymore.
It's too soon to take the title off of either of them.
Okay, Kevin Owens is the man.
So, do you think that with Cena doing these extra projects, the reality show, I know he did an interview the other day where somebody asked him if he would ever consider being Kelly Ripa's co-host, and he said he would entertain that idea. Do these Hollywood offerings make him a hypocrite from a few years ago when he kind of called The Rock out, or is this just kind of the natural progression as sports entertainers, if you will, get older? The ones that have the ability and the talent to do it obviously need a livelihood outside of the ring. So what are your thoughts on guys transitioning into mainstream roles and projects? Because I think it's a matter of time before we do see Cena and more of, you know, the reality shows. You know, Stone Cold Steve Austin's doing that too. Of course, The Rock's success.
Well, I mean, you look at it, The Rock debuted in 96, correct? Survivor Series 96.
Yes.
And then left WWE to go onto the Hollywood stuff full time in, 2002?
I think it was early 03, but yeah, it was in that time period, yes.
So 7 years. Let's give him 7 years.
Sure.
And as a main eventer, he didn't step up until 99, I'm going to say. You know, so you're looking at he had a run on top of 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena debuted in 2002, has been there now for 14 years, has been the top dog for the last almost 11 years. So I don't necessarily think it'd be hypocritical of Cena in regards to he's not leaving at the height of his popularity and turning his back completely. And I think even if he goes off and does other things, he will still continue to be a presence on WWE programming. And I think that would be the main difference, is if he just left completely like The Rock did, who was gone for, 7, 8 years before returning at WrestleMania 27?
Right, yeah.
Wrestled at WrestleMania 20. And then was, I think he'd been on had 2 or 3 pre-tapes, interview segments in that 7 years. I think Cena will stick around. And so I think that makes him not a hypocrite, but I definitely see him. I think it, as you said, it's a natural progression. It's if his in-ring career is winding down, he's still. I mean, I would assume he's made enough money that he doesn't need to work, as long as he's invested it wisely and whatnot. But I also think, I mean, he's definitely still young enough that he's not going to just sit at home,
right?
So, and if he can get the movie deals or the television shows or whatever, I think he would be foolish not to take them.
I totally agree. I completely 100% agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just the natural, and not that I want to see him go necessarily, but I think it's also better for WWE if he does, because that takes away that crutch of relying on John Cena to carry the company.
Yeah.
And I know, in the last year or two, they've tried, making Roman Reigns the focus. They've, now they've got Kevin Owens and AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose.
It's time to find a new face to run the place.
Yeah. But it's also, you can't just, as they have hopefully learned with Roman Reigns, you can't just say this is going to be the guy and put him in there.
Yeah, it needs to be that organic progression.
Yeah, and it's, you look at Austin. He was not, I don't think he was ever pegged to be the man, and it just happened. Austin 316 happened and took off organically, like you said. And I think people nowadays, when people complain about guys being buried or whatever, you have to remember, Austin won King of the Ring in 96. Austin 316 became a phenomenon by SummerSlam 96, so within 2 months. But it was still almost a year and a half later before he became champion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he I want to say SummerSlam, he was on the pre-show.
He was. It was the free-for-all against Yokozuna.
Yeah. So, and then Cena was, you know, cookie-cutter, white-bread, babyface, bland-looking guy until the holiday episode of SmackDown where he dressed like Vanilla Ice and started rapping. And somehow that became, you know, that kind of took on a life of its own, and then he became the doctor of Thugonomics and rapping, and he built the character based on that. You know, he wasn't necessarily slated, I don't think. Vince looked at him and said, okay, this is going to be our guy that's going to run this place for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think, unfortunately, with the Roman Reigns situation, is they're like, no, this is the guy we want on top. And we've discussed it plenty of times. I think Reigns has the potential to be a main event player, just not right now.
Right.
Like he's still, there's something missing in his character that doesn't connect with the fans. Whereas a guy like Kevin Owens, like AJ, like, I think they connect with the fans, but I don't know if they have, well, Owens, I think, does have the personality. AJ, I don't know if he's got that extra little spark, and this is not a knock against AJ because I'm a huge fan of his, but there's a difference between being a huge star in front of 1,000 people and being a huge star in front of 70,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, guys like Hogan, Flair, Cena, Rock, they have that quality, but not everybody does. I mean, you know, I just named five guys over a 40-year span, 30, 40 years. You know, how many other guys had good talent and a good look but would not connect with the fans?
Okay, and let's transition that into we don't typically talk about rumors, but this one has been running rampant for some time now. Two guys that I've connected more with him since his return, but one guy I never connected with was Goldberg. The other being Brock Lesnar, who are rumored to be facing off against each other at Survivor Series. And I don't really know how the rumor got started. I don't know if it's really going to happen, but since we have a little time here, let's chat about it. I did not care for this match, 14 years ago at WrestleMania 20?
12
years ago. Yeah. I'm not overly excited about it happening now, although I think it would go much differently. Brock, of course, is still in good relationship with the company. He's a monster. Goldberg, though, you know, has kind of faded away after that WrestleMania match 13 years ago and hasn't done, I don't think has, did he ever go to TNA and wrestle for TNA? I don't think he did anything after he left, did he?
He may have showed up at an independent show and probably speared somebody if he did anything, but I don't think he's ever had a match outside of WCW or WWE.
Yeah. So,
and,
yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say, you know, there were rumors this year around WrestleMania that Goldberg was going to be there, and talking to some friends and other fans, like, everybody was excited. And I just, again, I know I'm not the target, my demographic that they're going for, but I don't see the appeal of a Goldberg return in 2016.
Yes, we're on the same page. I wish we could find something to disagree about, but yes, I agree. Continue with your thoughts, because you're going to probably say exactly what I'm thinking.
You know, as you mentioned, Goldberg has been away. I don't... There has never been a groundswell of, oh my gosh, I hope Goldberg comes back. I hope, you know, he's just kind of disappeared and done his thing, and he would eventually pop up for, you know, for some interview or whatever. But I don't think today's fans care. In all honesty, once the streak ended, Goldberg ended. You know, like, there was no – and his WWE run was nothing of note, other than the, you know, title run that you expected it to happen, and then the matches with Triple H, which weren't that good, and then the match with Lesnar at WrestleMania, which the only thing people cared about that match was Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, like, if you bring him back, why would you put him against Brock Lesnar in a match that's already happened and has such a negative connotation in history that... And then, I don't know if this is going to happen. This is rumored to be, like, what will set it up is Braun Strowman, you know, has been going through jobber after jobber, and now he's telling Mick Foley he wants better talent or better competition. Mm-hmm. And then if you have Goldberg show up and beat Strowman, well, now you've just negated 3 months of a build-up for Strowman.
Right.
To put over a guy who, in all honesty, is not going to be around week after week. He'll be... I can't see Goldberg doing anything other than a Lesnar-type contract to show up maybe 3-4 times a year. I know ratings are down and house show attendance is down, whatever. But bringing in way past their prime performers is not going to change that.
That's well said. And I had not heard the Braun Strowman or Strowman thing. So
with an extreme... grain of salt.
Yeah.
I think Fuji would have enough grains of salt to take that route with. I don't understand the interest in this match at all.
Yeah. Well, and what we want to hear from you guys who are listening too. Do you care about Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar in 2016? Why or why not? Leave a comment either here on the podcast or head on over to the My123Cents Facebook page. And the other big thing that's kind of come out throughout the weekend is a survey, a marketing survey by WWE in regards to the network. And we won't break down the entire plan. There, it's a four-plan process. One of it would be WWE Network would be free, but with very limited access, obviously, to things, including just some video clips, a little bit of the video archive. You would get 5 hours per month on that. You would still have to watch commercials, and you could use it on your devices. That's a free plan, which is basically what you would get if you went on and looked for this stuff on YouTube, because WWE does post a lot of stuff on YouTube. Now, to me, the big news here with this is the $14.99 plan. It's plan four, and like I said, we'll have the information on the My123Cents page. You get all kinds of goodies with it, including the live content of NXT, the pay-per-views. There's no commercials. But the big thing is, or at least to me, and when Chad brought it up to me on the phone, is access to independent wrestling content such as TNA and Ring of Honor. Now, this is just a marketing survey, and they may just be throwing stuff out there just to see what fans would be interested in. As of right now, WWE does not have access to the TNA library. They do not have access to the Ring of Honor libraries, as far as I know. This, like I said, this is probably just a let's test the waters and see. But again, there's been the rumor and speculation that Vince McMahon is among those interested in purchasing the library of TNA, and Billy Corgan would buy the company and continue to run it under a rebranded name. So I guess two points of discussion here. I think this would obviously be a good thing for WWE if they had those libraries. I can't think of the word I'm trying to use. How realistic do you think it is that Vince will get a hold of both Ring of Honor and TNA's libraries to broadcast on the network? Because I would think that it might even be a good deal for those companies if they sold, leased, or rented access to their stuff.
Yeah. I don't think it's very likely with Ring of Honor, just because Ring of Honor is already owned by a company. You know, it's not a personal ownership like Vince owning WWE or Dixie Carter owning TNA, a full-fledged television conglomerate owns Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
Although I could see, I think for Ring of Honor's sake, like if TNA or if WWE offered them some type of deal to air their weekly show, like why wouldn't you jump on that? You know, so that you can maybe get a bigger audience. Because like right now, I live in an area that Ring of Honor does not broadcast on television, and I live in the second largest market in the country.
So you don't get a Ring of Honor out there. I did not know that.
No.
Wow, it's on two or three times here.
Yeah, because Sinclair, the company that owns the station, is more of a, I believe, a southern and west or east United States company. Although I think they also own like some Virginia, or places in Nevada and maybe Oregon or Washington, but those are limited stations to compared to the number of stations that they own over the rest of the country.
Interesting. Okay.
I can watch it. It is on Comet.tv, which apparently is also a channel. And if I remembered and wanted to, I can watch it live on Wednesday nights when it airs. But I'm usually, I mean, it airs at 9 o'clock here, which there's other programming on at 9 o'clock, and I would have to watch it live online. I can't record it.
Oh, I gotcha.
So, I would think it would be beneficial to Ring of Honor, although, and I think we may have mentioned this before, when the network was even in its initial phases of starting up, there used to be a show back in the 80s, and I'm probably going to butcher the name, and hopefully you know the show I'm talking about. It was, I believe, hosted by Bill Apter, and it was like a collection of promotions, and they would show like one match from Portland, one from Mid-South, and the name of the show is escaping me. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't remember the name of the show either, but I do remember what you're talking about.
But I think it could be beneficial to WWE to kind of vary their programming because, yes, the network itself has plenty of content to keep people satisfied. You know, if you pay $9.99 a month, you're getting your money's worth with the show. But if they could show you some other promotions that have good production value, which I think would be a key,
mm-hmm.
and kind of maybe show the spotlight on independent wrestling so that you can, I don't know. I mean, I guess it would be a catch-22 for WWE. It's you give them programming, but then if the other company is putting on a better product, is it going to take away from Raw, SmackDown? If WWE is running a house show in the same town as this other company, are people going to be like, well, I can pay $50 to go watch WWE and send the nosebleeds, or I can pay $20 to be ringside at this other promoter? You know, I don't know. I'm sure from WWE's point, there are both pros and cons. I think as a fan, I would be interested in being able to watch other promotions.
Keeping it all in one spot, yeah, it would be great.
Yeah, and then as far as TNA goes, like, I can see them wanting the library just obviously for any highlight packages that they do on guys who, you know, came from TNA, Bobby Roode, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, whatnot. Unfortunately, I can't see them paying more for the TNA library than they pay for WCW library, although I can see Dixie Carter being dumb enough to try to get them to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from Billy Corgan's standpoint, if he ends up buying TNA, it would be best to go with a brand new company, basically. Mm-hmm. Rebrand, change the name. TNA has such, I mean, other than being a stupid name to begin with, it has just, you know, a stench of 14 years of mediocrity hanging around its neck. So if you can change it and get people who, you know, aren't that internet savvy, maybe, or who don't fully understand that, oh, it's TNA under a different name, under new ownership, they might give it a new try.
Yeah.
I don't know. But again, I mean, one of TNA's problems, and if Billy takes over, he has to change this no matter what he does with the company, is just awareness. There's, you know, in their 14-year history, there's been very little promotional marketing on a global scale. I don't know how many times I've read online, like, oh, TNA had a show this weekend, and I found out about it the day it happened, or the day after. Like, they don't know how to market themselves.
Yeah. So what do you think it is, and do you think that this would be the reason why fans, at least I'm guilty of this, you know, when, for example, Drew McIntyre or Bobby Lashley left WWE and went to TNA, it was like, have WWE's, you know, rejects, you know, we didn't want him anymore, you know, have at it. But then when Bobby Roode and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles come to WWE, it's like, you know, this is the greatest moment in the history of wrestling, and fans, you know, kind of lose their minds over it. So is it because WWE has a machine that can get behind this talent and actually do something with them, whereas with TNA it was just kind of like, you're taking a step back and going to TNA. When you're leaving, though, you're taking a step up to obviously the big time?
Well, I think there's two points. One, I think because WWE is WWE is wrestling to most fans. If you talk wrestling, they're naturally going to just assume WWE.
Right.
So when a WWE person would go into TNA, TNA would always make the mistake of whatever they had going on in their storyline at that point was all of a sudden shelved, and that ex-WWE star was inserted into the main event. You know, even guys like Rikishi, Test, Randy Savage, who only made one appearance in TNA, were all put into main event or pay-per-view main events because, oh, they're XW, you know, the perception is they're WWE, XWWE stars, make them the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when a guy jumps from TNA, you know, he shows up, with the exception of AJ Styles, who, you know, I think his Japanese run helped him more than his TNA run did, as far as going straight to the main roster. But when a TNA guy shows up, they go into NXT, they're kind of put in the middle of the pack, and they work themselves up. And so it doesn't feel like they're being crammed down shoved down your throat. They don't disrupt what is already going on, and TNA, and yeah, and that goes back to also the promotional thing where, you know, you can have Sting, Christian, Kurt Angle all show up there, but if you're watching the show, you know they're there. But if you don't watch the show, do you know that Kurt Angle is in TNA? Do you know Rob Van Dam showed up? Do you know, you know, it's, I think
it's another reason why Vince McMahon is so revered as basically, and I'm not kissing his ass, but he's a genius when it comes to this, or there's just a lot of people in this business who don't know what the hell they're doing and try to emulate it, but Vince McMahon has found the money and the resources to surround himself around the right people who can market and get his product out there, I guess.
And there's two points to that. One, yeah, that's the other problem with TNA, is like they tried to be WWE after WCW went out. And I think people, what they didn't realize is fans didn't want another WWE. If they want to watch WWE, they're going to watch WWE.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunity to do that.
Yeah, if I want to watch something different, then you have to give me something. I think that's why Ring of Honor succeeded, you know, for the last 14 years, is they presented a different type of wrestling program. It's why Lucha Underground is doing moderately well, because it's a different type of show. And then the other point is WWE has been around for 30 years, almost 40 years. If you're a new company, you know, and you look at Vince trying to start the XFL. And unfortunately, he, much like TNA, was like, okay, we're going to do this right out of the gate. We're going to try to be as big as the NFL. And, you know, he had NBC behind him because they have a good working relationship. And like, okay, we're going to put these games on in prime time and go for it. Instead of building a company and starting slow, and I think if they would have gone more a traditional afternoon game time and just been another sport, the XFL may have lasted, I don't know if they'd still be around, but they would have lasted, I think, more than one season. But instead, they tried to be the NFL straight out of the gate. It didn't work for them, just like trying to be WWE straight out of the gate didn't work for TNA.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And speaking, you brought up WCW in that, and that brings me to a question that actually Greg Mahochko, who engineers the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, keeps it running and gets this show on every week for us. We appreciate that, Greg. But Greg wanted to know about Clash of Champions because for the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, but I think for the first time since acquiring WCW 15 years ago, this was the first time we had heard Clash of the Champions used. It was used, of course, for the Raw pay-per-view a couple of weeks ago in exchange of Night of Champions, I guess. But Greg wants to know what we think about WWE using the name Clash of Champions, and then would we like to see other WCW events like War Games or similar brought back? What are the chances of this happening now, 15 to 20 years later? And if you could pick one to be brought back, which would it be? So what are your thoughts on Clash of Champions being used? I liked it personally, and I almost wish they would go the way of how they did Clash of Champions, you know, three or four times or however many times a year they did it, where each one had some build up to it. And it was, you know, because these monthly Raw pay-per-views and monthly SmackDown pay-per-views are going to continue to happen. So I'm all for them being a shorter little special-like thing, but calling them, you could call them all Clash of Champions and give them like kind of like the NXT thing where they call it TakeOver and then give it a title along with it. I don't know that that'll ever happen. I was always a WWF guy, WWE guy over WCW, NWA, but I liked the Clash of Champions concept and I liked the title of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with him using the title. I would say if they're going to use it, to make it a once a year thing, just because with live television every week, what made Clash of Champions exciting back when it was happening in WCW is, one, it was live, and it was like getting a pay-per-view on free television or on cable television.
Right.
Whereas now you get that every week.
Yeah.
You know.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I am fine with them using it. If they're going to bring anything else back, I would like to see Halloween Havoc return.
Yeah, I wrote a blog about that not very long ago. But yeah, that would be the one. And did you like, because I kind of went back and forth with WCW on Halloween Havocs, but did they continue the trend? Because those first, I don't know, 3, 4, or 5 years, they had like, I don't want to say hokiness, but yeah, you know, Abdullah the Butcher getting fried in the electric chair, and they had the gimmicked match with Sting and Flair against Muta and Funk in that first year. Did they continue on with some of the Halloweenish gimmicks throughout the whole run of WCW, yeah, or did they stop?
They stopped. I think the set decorations always had like tombstones and that, but yeah, as far as gimmick matches, I'm trying to think of what the last few Halloween Havocs had. For anyone who has not seen it, I believe it was 97, Halloween Havoc 97, Eddie Guerrero takes on Rey Mysterio Jr. and probably the best cruiserweight match from WCW. So definitely recommend checking that out. But yeah, I think Halloween Havoc was just, you know, because it was October, name fit the month. So
yeah, and I would like to if they do it, I would like to see them do it with at least one non-traditional match, just so it's not, you know, I just don't want tombstones or, you know, the commentators dressed up in Halloween costumes. I would want to see one outside the box kind of, and maybe even come up with a new concept, a new kind of Halloween concept match for that event. What are your thoughts on War Games?
I like War Games. I think it's something that after WWE bought WCW, I hoped that they would incorporate that. I don't know logistically what it would mean for setup. Like, how many seats would you have to give up to do the setup with the two rings? And is that financially feasible for WWE now? You know, do they want to give up that extra money?
And because weren't they contemplating not doing, or they're very limited now where they can do Hell in a Cell because of the arena setups too, right?
Yes, but I think Hell in a Cell
is taller.
Or not Hell in a Cell, it's Elimination Chamber.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, because the weight of the Elimination Chamber.
That's and right.
The way some arenas are reconfiguring the roofs, I guess. They're limited to where they can hang the chamber.
So for fans who don't know, the War Games basically was two rings enclosed in a cage, and you had teams of five, I believe, and the first one man from each team started off, and then they did a coin toss, and then every 2 or 5 minutes, I don't remember the time increments, another member of the team would be added. So at one point you would have Dusty Rhodes in there, for example, against both Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, and then Dusty's next partner would come in, and then the Horsemen would get. And I bring up the Horsemen and Dusty because they are the ones who, in my opinion, revolutionized it and got it really off the ground and starting. And that's where I think, I don't know that WWE could replicate it, because for the fans like us who grew up watching it, and that they defined War Games for me at least, and I don't know that anybody could replicate that without it looking, you know, and obviously this generation does not know, you know, Nikita Koloff and the Road Warriors and the Four Horsemen and Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA and all those guys who made such an impact in War Games. So, you know, if they rebranded it as their own, then yeah, people would definitely buy into it. But there was just such a nostalgia and such a, I just think it would be hard to replicate that. And I would have trouble as a fan watching it without comparing it to the originals.
Yes. Well, right now TNA does Lethal Lockdown, which is basically a one ring War Games.
Uh-huh.
And they do that every year. And it's just, I mean, one ring is just too cluttered, especially since they also throw in weapons hanging from the cage.
Uh-huh.
The problem with War Games, and I'm trying to, I mean, there's a DVD out of a collection of War Games. I'm sure if you have the network, there's probably a War Games collection pack that you can view. And if you haven't seen the match, my favorite War Games was Sting Squadron versus the Horsemen, I want to say in 91, where it was... where Sid was one of the Horsemen and Flying Brian
was. Oh, yeah. That was 91, yeah.
Yeah, and that ending is just so... I mean, it's credible on its own, but then the fact that I don't think the ending went necessarily the way it was supposed to makes it even more engaging.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think the problem with War Games, and I'll throw in, because I haven't mentioned Chikara in quite some time on this podcast... Chikara does every year their Cybernetico, which is 2 8-man team Survivor Series type matches, where it's elimination. The difference is they have a batting order, so everybody has a number like 1, 2, 3, and you can only tag the person in that follows you. And then there can only be one winner. So even if one team is eliminated, the team that still has more than one member wrestles each other until there's one final survivor.
I like that idea.
Where I give Shakar credit, and I don't know how Mike Quackenbush does it. 1 year they had a very lackluster Cybernetico because they just took eight tag teams and split them up and put the partners on different teams. Mm. And so it was hard to keep track at home when you're watching on video to know who's on whose team. But most of the time it is 2 8-man teams that through the course of the season, the storylines have been built up to make sense why these 2 teams of 8 exist. And that's where I don't know if WWE could do a thing where actually have 2 teams of 5 and have it be a feud that needed war games in order to have the culmination of the feud.
Mm-hmm.
We complain now about Hell in a Cell. You know, when it started, it was supposed to be, there was a specific reason for Hell in a Cell. Now they have a pay-per-view where they're just like, oh, you guys are fighting and it's going to be a Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah. Well, and that's the topic I want to end on, Hell in a Cell, and it just came to me as you were talking about that, because obviously for sure we're confirmed it's Roman Reigns against Rusev for the U.S. title. What are your thoughts, because typically there are 2 Hell in a Cell matches, what are your thoughts on Charlotte versus Sasha Banks, Hell in a Cell?
It would be interesting. I did not get to see Raw this past week due to moving and not having cable. But I saw that Sasha won the title back. And it would be interesting because I can't think of, obviously in WWE, there's never been a women's cage match that I can recall.
Did Trish and Lita not have one?
Did they?
I don't know.
We'll
put the intern on that to find out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think since TNA has an all-cage pay-per-view, which is one of the dumbest things, even though the brainchild, I believe, of Dusty Rhodes, when he was working there, an all-cage pay-per-view is just as dumb as having a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view where you are obligated to have a Hell in a Cell match. And I believe they've had women's matches on that show.
Victoria and Lita actually had a cage match.
Interesting. I have no recollection of that.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I can definitely see, especially with Dana Brooke being on, in Charlotte's corner, much like the way James J. Dillon used to be in Ric Flair's corner, that a cage match would make sense. Although, if they did it, it would have made more sense to not have Sasha win the title on Raw and have her win it at Hell in a Cell.
Right.
Because Dana Brooke would be out of the picture. And speaking of James J. and this whole cage idea, if we could get a mini cage and suspend Dana from, 15 feet above the ring to keep her out of, the way they used to do with James J. Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be something that fans would not understand the significance of, but I would get a kick out of.
Yeah, that would be fun. So you would not, you don't think that the, and this is, I started asking, so now I'm going to finish it. I don't mean for this to come out sounding sexist, because I do think that this would be great for a Hell in a Cell, but you don't think that the brutality or the perceived brutality of the Hell in a Cell, like it originally was, is too intense for the women to get involved with, then, I'm guessing.
No, I think you're in this time frame of wrestling where women are being treated like men, and on the independent scene especially, where intergender wrestling is kind of the norm now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously in WWE, I don't think we'll ever see it to outside of maybe a comedy match or something gimmicky.
Yeah.
But I think I can see Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, headlining some combination of those four, headlining a pay-per-view at some point. And I think it should happen, especially if you want to make it, you know, make your women's division seem on par with the guys' division. And so in that regard, I think a Sasha Charlotte cage match actually makes a lot of sense. My thing would be just with having the title change hands recently, does it make sense for it to be in the cage now?
Right.
I don't know, but I have no problem with it. And I think they would be capable of putting together a solid, brutal match that would be different enough for fans to take notice.
Yeah, I would argue that it's the hottest rivalry going on right now on Raw, and maybe even in all of WWE. I just am very high on Charlotte.
Did you forget about Titus O'Neil and Darren Young?
Making Darren Young great again. Well, we're trying to make my 1-2-3 cents great again. Chad, do you have anything else you want to add to episode 99 of this week's show?
Just that I didn't realize that it was 99. I was going to talk to you about episode 100, but that's kind of pointless now. So wait for me to be paying attention.
It's all right, man. It's all right. So stay tuned. I'm going to announce on Facebook the guest for next week because I'm not 100% confirmed, although I know he is going to do it because I have talked to his people and it's going to happen, but I don't want to jinx it. I do have another Hall of Famer in my hip pocket as a backup just in case. So anyway, thanks again for listening, sharing, downloading. Check out my123cents.com and find us on all forms of social media as well. We'll talk to you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.